Families in Cincinnati have been struggling with collapsed ceilings, weeks without heat, and a lack of hot water. They live in buildings formerly owned by a real estate investment group that's accused of abandoning their properties last fall. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. What are the legal battles facing the investment group called Vision and Beyond? And how's the city responding? And what's the impact on tenants? Joining me now to discuss all that are Chief Counsel of the Cincinnati Law Department's Quality of Life Division, Mark Manning. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And WVXU long-form reporter Nick Swartzel. Welcome back, Nick.
Hey, Lucy.
Nick, tell us just briefly when Vision and Beyond first came onto the real estate scene in Cincinnati and what case did they make for buying up all these rental properties around here?
Sure. So Vision and Beyond, according to news releases they've put out or did put out since, started in 2018, founded ostensibly in Cincinnati, pulled a lot of investment from other places, and their pitch to investors and to tenants, too, was, hey, look, like cities like Cincinnati are becoming more popular as coastal cities become more expensive. People are moving to places like Cincinnati, middle American cities more. And on top of that, real estate is undervalued in a lot of these cities. So we can buy up some of these buildings, provide housing that is somewhat affordable. And one of the secrets to the sauce of keeping it affordable is that we're vertically integrated, meaning we do the property management, we do the material, sort of like getting the materials we need to maintain buildings. And we also have an ownership stake as well. So everything's kind of in-house. So that's kind of their pitch.
And the company did face some controversy early on in downtown Cincinnati, didn't they?
Yeah. In 2021, they got caught up in the sort of affordable housing debate when they bought a building called Courtview. That's on Court and Vine, I think. Yes. And they told the residents there that they would need to leave because the building was going to be rehabbed and you know, you just got to go because we got to work on the whole building. Courtview was one of the last fairly affordable non-deed restricted, meaning like not subsidized buildings downtown. And so folks who lived in that building were pretty upset about having to leave. I don't know how much work went on at Courtview, but it remains vacant today. The project, whatever it was never completed.
Mark, when did city officials first become aware of problems with these properties?
So Vision and Beyond had been on our radar for a few years. As a pretty large property owner, most large property owners have some sort of contact with the city, just, you know, even good ones do, because just the nature of the business that they're in. Vision and Beyond seemed to have a little bit more in terms of the issues that they were encountering at their properties. And so we had been kind of working through those issues with them for at least two or three years, trying to address code violations, but primarily at properties that they had, which were vacant, not their occupied rental properties. So that was really the focus of what the city had been doing for the last probably 2 years, primarily that property, which is on Court Street, as well as some properties they have in the West End and over the Rhine.
And what kind of code violations were you seeing in these properties?
These are just vacant, condemned, like shell structures that really were in a severe state of dilapidation that needed stabilization or demolition, things of that nature. So pretty severe issues for those particular properties and making sure that they were investing what resources needed to be done to make sure that they were safe and sanitary.
And eventually, I know the city took some legal action against Vision and Beyond. Walk us through that, Mark.
So that was the culmination of a lot of that work that other attorneys, Kate Burrows and Johnny Fitzpatrick and our office had done for a couple of years that got filed back in October about those vacant, condemned, blighted properties, which were in Over the Rhine and the West End. And so it sought to have a receiver appointed to get into them if Vision and Beyond was not going to either tear them down or repair them, that the city would do it and then essentially charge them for the cost of doing that.
And that's what, just for our listeners who don't understand receivership, that's when somebody gets appointed to kind of do that work in place of the owner, right?
That's correct. So we go to court and we ask a judge, hey, judge, like there needs to be somebody appointed as a as a caregiver for this while this case pens. And receivers are used in a lot of different contexts, not just in when we're trying to abate a nuisance or repair a building, but in this case, get in there, make the repairs, and then ask that the owner pay for the cost of those repairs as once they're completed.
Mm-hmm. Nick, how many properties are we talking about? I mean, roughly how many units of housing are affected by all this?
So Vision and Beyond owns roughly 70 properties that are caught up in some legal battle, not just the cities. There are others, which I think we'll get to. And of those, by my count, it's more than 600 units of housing. Not all of those units are necessarily occupied, but we are talking about hundreds of tenants easily.
We're talking about what's happening with properties that were owned by the real estate investment group Vision and Beyond. Do you live in one of the properties or know somebody who does? We want to hear from you. Call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Nick, you've talked with residents who live in these properties and have struggled with maintenance problems. Melissa Staley told you that she went without heat for 16 days in November and December.
When I say it was 15 below outside, it was freezing in here. So I had the heaters going. I had three heaters going and my oven just to keep it in the 50s.
Mm. Nick, tell us more about what she went through during that time.
Yeah, Melissa had the misfortune of getting caught up in kind of the fallout after Vision and Beyond kind of stopped taking care of their properties, stopped having property management. And in this interim phase where it was kind of unclear who was responsible for that. And so during that time, her furnace went out. And actually, she told me it went out twice, once later for a less
shorter
amount of time. Yeah. Yeah, she was in contact with a person who she wasn't sure was the property manager, but said, hey, send me your rent checks. But she just didn't really know like what was going on with that. And they did eventually fix her furnace, but it did take more than 2 weeks. In the meantime, she had pet parakeets, and you can't really have those birds down in the 50s. Like that's not good for them. And two of the three passed away. She got sick. All the things you'd expect from living in a building that's like 50 degrees inside.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine her electric bill was a lot higher with all those space heaters and everything too.
Yeah. She showed me her bill from the time that her heat was out. And she had like documentation for all of this. She was showing me the text that she was sending the property managers. And she was showing me pictures of her thermostat. And she, you know, showed me her bill for the, you know, following month. And it was three times at least what it normally would be, maybe more than that.
Yeah. Mark, I know you said a lot of the buildings that the city's been involved with are vacant or condemned. Are you familiar with some of the other problems that residents are dealing with in these properties?
Yeah, 100%. And really that the city's involvement, which in court started back in October and obviously predated that out of court, but it kind of hit warp speed towards November and December of this year, because what had happened was Vision and Beyond had defaulted on a bunch of their mortgages. The lenders appeared in court, asked for a receiver to be appointed just to manage the properties during the pendency of their foreclosure action, which is a pretty standard action that happens all the time. If you're a lender, you want to make sure someone's taking care of the thing that you're ultimately foreclosing on. But then what happened after that receiver was appointed is Vision said, well, we don't need any of these people working for us anymore because the receiver's in control of all of our properties. So those people were all let go. But then what happened was the company that asked the court to appoint the receiver said, we have a legal issue here. We don't think that our mortgage is valid on these properties, and then asked the court to essentially remove the receiver. So that put us all into a situation where suddenly this receiver was basically going to be removed from the property. Vision and Beyond had fired everyone, and the city was obviously very concerned. Now we have over 70 properties, more than 600 units of housing, and there was an impending, we don't know who's in charge here. Who's going to be collecting the trash? Who's going to be making sure the heat's on? Going to be making sure that the pipes don't freeze, all that sort of stuff. And that really accelerated right around Christmas, which between the city's building department and the law department, we coordinated the building department really respond to a lot of the emergency issues that Nick was describing. And then in the background, the city's law department working to file a case so that we could have the court appoint another receiver to kind of as a gap filler to kind of stabilize the whole portfolio, have somebody in control responding to the tenants' issues. And then when the city filed that, you had a lot of other lenders and investors and individuals kind of popping up overseas. And now, like, the action that the city filed had over 100 defendants, involved all of these properties, each of which had individual companies that held them. And a lot of those companies had individual investors, many of which were overseas, all of which have retained lawyers. So you're talking about something that's kind of been globbed together into this monstrosity of a court case now that's kind of just in its infancy in court. And we're just trying to kind of keep the wheels on the bus for the time being to make sure that the tenants, while the investors and Vision and Beyond and the lenders are all essentially trying to figure out who gets paid, when they get paid, and what order they get paid, and whether some people should get paid, that the tenants are protected. And that's the city's goal in trying to file that action. Mm.
And Nick, you know, Mark was just talking about trash collection and some of these mm-hmm. maintenance things that come up when you own a house, when you live in an apartment. I mean, maintenance needs come up. What kinds of things did you hear from residents aside from what Melissa Staley experienced?
Yeah, so I spent several weeks going around to some of these properties and trying to talk to residents. And I'll say that I've been reporting on housing for more than a decade now, and I've seen conditions as bad in other places, but not to the widespread degree that I saw them, you know, at these various properties. And these are things like, I talked to a man who showed me where his ceiling had caved in his son's room because there was a leak that went unaddressed. And that ceiling, there was plaster all over the floor. The ceiling was sagging down. There was a hole. Been that way for a month because there was just nobody to, you know, address that. That was at a building called Kirby Avenue Apartments. There were a lot of issues at that one. Another man reported that his ceiling had kind of like collapsed a little bit. Another resident, she showed me video on her phone of water across the floor of her apartment, like a couple inches, and she said it smelled not right. So there are those kinds of issues at that building. At other buildings, one resident in another building called Coachwood, who didn't want to be identified, said, it feels apocalyptic here. It feels like I don't know who to talk to. Like, I don't know who to pay my rent to. Garbage wasn't getting collected. He said there was a severe leak in an unoccupied unit that needed to be addressed. He had, you know, some issues getting maintenance for his unit as well. Shortly after I talked to him, he texted me saying, like, I just got a weird notice to vacate in 3 days. And it just has this email address on it I've never seen before, and there's no other information. It says I owe all this money, and I have no idea who this person sent this was. Now, subsequently, Judge Gehring in one of the hearings was like, yeah, that's not enforceable. Like, tell tenants not to worry about that. But everybody at that complex got that. So a lot of, you know, in addition to, like, physical problems, this sense of, like, I have no idea what's happening. If I don't pay my rent, is somebody going to try to evict me? If I do pay my rent, am I paying the right person? Because there might be multiple people asking for rent. Like, sure. So just mass confusion.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for your call. What's your question or comment?
I was a tenant at the Courtview when they bought the building. And I also had a business on the first floor there. So I didn't have anything but absolutely horrific experiences with Vision and Beyond.
Mm. Were you able to find another place to go, Patrick?
I did, but I was not unable to. It was very difficult because, remember, that was during COVID shutdown and the housing crisis was really starting, rents skyrocketing. But the way they treated the tenants there was just, goes beyond what you guys are saying. They treated everyone like third-class pieces of crap. Mm. They didn't want to meet with us. One of the people, the day after they bought it, the owners, and one thing's not, I think needs to be mentioned, these are military people. They weren't just like casual, nice investors. They came from Israel. They're all Israeli military people. And I had received messages from someone who used to live in Cincinnati about to look after these people because they were interested in the building. This was somebody I didn't even know, really, but it's casually met here in Cincinnati. And they came in the day after they bought it, start kicking all the doors. People knew we had to move because the tenants, previous owners, let us know, saying that anything that was in the hallway was theirs and they were taking it, calling everybody names, wouldn't respond to any kind of like, hey, can we meet with you?
Yeah.
Just ignore, like, walk by, like, you know, you don't exist.
Oh, Patrick, I'm so sorry you went through that. I'm going to stop you there so we can talk more about some of these other issues. I'm glad you found another place to stay. I'm sorry you experienced that. Nick, I know you've tried to contact the original owners of Vision and Beyond many different ways, many, many times. Have you ever gotten any response from them about these problems that so many tenants are experiencing?
No. I've tried calling their offices. I've tried their personal email addresses attached to the company, Vision and Beyond. Someone who I believe is a former employee sent what they said were their cell phone numbers. I tried those just to see what happened. I went to their office in Mount Auburn and knocked on the door. It was a glass door you could see through, and there were months of mail piled up behind that door. I did eventually get in touch with one of the attorneys that was listed for Vision and Beyond in court documents, and was able to get him on the phone, and he said he would pass along my request for comment to them. But that's as close as I've gotten to hearing anything back.
Well, we are going to continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll explore why eviction rates are rising in Hamilton County. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Cincinnati properties formerly owned by the real estate investment group Vision and Beyond, what tenants are experiencing, and how the city's responding. My guests are Chief Counsel of the Cincinnati Law Department's Quality of Life Division, Mark Manning, and WVXU long-form reporter Nick Swartzel. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Nick, the owners of Vision and Beyond are being accused of a fraudulent scheme in another lawsuit. I know this is very complicated, but can you briefly explain what the accusation is there?
Sure. Before we get into the allegations, I want to kind of remind folks about the business model here, which is that Vision and Beyond would kind of attract investors for a property, form an LLC with them to manage and own that property, and go from there. Well, what the accusations are from some investors is that Vision and Beyond would attract them into this LLC to own a property, having already purchased the property beforehand with what they call a straw buyer for a much lower price, and then pass it on to the investors for a higher price. So already making money kind of like without the investors knowing. The second set of allegations is that after all that happened and the LLC was created, Vision and Beyond, through some again, these are allegations, fraudulent property transfer, was able to take out mortgages on the properties without the investors knowing. That those mortgages are the mortgages that then creditors came to collect after Vision and Beyond didn't pay them. And that's kind of what precipitated this whole series of dominoes. I think it's fair to say it that way.
Wow. Mark, who owns these buildings now? Does it vary from building to building, or is that at all clear in any of this?
It is not clear, and I think that's what will probably be in court for at least the foreseeable future, it's safe to say. A lot of these individual investors who have given their money to Vision and Beyond have appeared and said, like, we didn't know what was going on. They didn't have authority to enter into these loans and these mortgages with these companies. Obviously, the lenders are very upset at having advanced $30, $60 million on these loans to Vision and Beyond. They're now not being paid and potentially, you know, fraudulently even obtained to begin with. And so the properties are all still held by these individual LLCs. And one of the tricky parts for the city is that these individual LLCs, the investors will appear and say, I have nothing to do with the people who are accused of doing all these bad things. You know, I'm an innocent person. I live overseas. I'm just trying to manage my property and not be suffer a loss because this is maybe my retirement or something like that. And trying to kind of get to the truth of that to understand, like, well, you know, we need to protect our residents to make sure that we're not just turning you back over to somebody else that's going to do just as bad as Vision and Beyond did. So we kind of have to get to the bottom of that. But who those investors are and what their interests are and what they want to do is something that will be in court, I would imagine, for the foreseeable future.
Back when you talked with Melissa Staley, Nick, she told you it's not at all clear who owns the building where she lives.
I only lived here since August, and since August there have been three different owners. Property and Beyond, who was I originally rented from, these people that claim they bought the building, and then the city says that they have control of the building. So, like I said, at this point, I'm ready to go to court because I have no idea who to pay. I'm not going to pay you. You pocketed the money, and then everybody's looking at me like, where's my rent money?
And she told you she's being really careful about who gets those rent payments.
I work 6 days a week. I take care of the elderly. And my time frame is from 8 in the morning to 9 o'clock at night. So to just give you my money willy-nilly.
What is Melissa's status now, Nick?
Sure. Yeah, and I want to clarify during our conversation in which that was recorded, Melissa phrased it as if she was saying the city owned the property. She knows that it's a receiver and that that's just kind of like the city trying to take care of the property. She got a notice about that, and her and her neighbors were like, I don't understand what this is. This isn't a thing that happens every day, right? It's like, how would anybody really know what to do with the situation?
Most people never have
to
deal with it. Yeah.
Right. So, but as you heard, a lot of really justified confusion, right? So, at a hearing last month now, Judge Gearing briefly cleared up a little bit about her situation when he kind of said, okay, these folks who are working on this property right now, who are, they represent the investors. For now, their receiver is going to be the person that gets the money, and that's who Melissa is paying to right now. Mm-hmm. However, it's unclear if she's going to get reimbursed for the time she went without heat, for the increased electrical bill. And she's just like, I'm willing to pay rent. I just want to know that you're going to make me whole for this time where I was suffering and paying way more for my electric.
Sure. Mark, what's the best advice for renters who get caught up in a situation like this? And we hope it's a minority of renters in the city. I mean, there are a lot of people who rent, and certainly most of them don't have to deal with these kinds of situations. But what should people do if they do get caught up in something like this?
Sure. And this situation in particular is fairly unique. I think it's safe to say I've worked at the city now for almost 17 years, and I can't think of a time where something like this has ever happened. Where a portfolio is essentially abandoned of something of this size. But generally, where people have conditions-related issues, the best thing to do is to call the city, the 311 line that we have to talk to, to register a complaint with the building department or health department. Those are kind of our first responders in terms of getting out there and documenting what's going on. And then ultimately, enough time has passed and there just hasn't been a response, and it depends on what the issue is. No heat, that's always a very serious concern for us during the winter. No water, that things of that nature. But just other more routine, property maintenance issues, once those linger for a while or we start seeing them more extensively across an entire portfolio, then we pull those together and try to deal with them comprehensively, kind of as we've done in a lot of other cases, this one aside.
How does this case, Mark, compare to other cases where the city's taken institutional property owners to court? Because the city has done this kind of thing before, but how does this one compare? And is this are you seeing a trend? Is this a problem with institutional property investors in the city?
It certainly is unique, as I was saying, in that I think just the scale and the speed at which it all happened, nobody expected that. I think what happened in court happened so quickly, and then we were in a position just to, within 30 days, kind of react, get somebody out there to the tenants knew they were being taken care of and that they weren't paying their rent into a black box somewhere overseas. But generally, I mean, we are seeing a lot of investment. We have for the last decade from overseas, a lot of other places, and individual investors. I think what we have seen is, there are these large companies that will securitize interests in real estate and sell them, just like you would on Wall Street, that sort of thing. Has been around for a while, but the individual investor who maybe I have somebody sell me the interest in a individual property that I want to go to Cincinnati or Cleveland or Columbus or Louisville, and I'm going to give you my retirement, and you're going to buy a property and operate it for me, and we're going to be partners, and you're going to operate it, and I'm just going to collect the rent. That is a more of a new thing that we're seeing, and that it's happening on a scale that's kind of concerning, given that you have a lot of people that aren't particularly sophisticated that have a lot invested in this as individuals that may be being taken advantage of, and the city is only seeing it from the effect side of things. When we see properties not being taken care of, we don't see all the back and forth about where the money is going and who's getting it unless we end up taking action in court.
Well, and you mentioned earlier that some of these institutional investors do a good job. I mean, it's not that they all are doing a bad job. There are plenty that are doing a good job. Nick, did you want to add to kind of what you've seen with all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think as you mentioned, there are property owners of all sizes and all levels of sophistication who are doing good job as landlords, and then there are some that are not. I think some of the larger ones that don't have a lot of local accountability because they don't have a big presence here. You know, we've seen a few cases where those have gone pretty bad. I think it's safe to say that.
Yeah. Well, and Melissa Staley told you she just wants what's fair.
All I want you to do is be fair. That's all I'm asking. I'm not asking you to pay my... I went on ahead and... I said, screw it, and went on ahead and paid the gas and electric bill. You seen how much it was.
Yeah.
I went and paid the gas and electric bill this month. The renter's insurance, everything's paid up, but you guys, because I need you to be fair. If you said you were going to compensate me for 16 days of freezing in here, and you know it was freezing, do that.
What's next for these renters, Nick?
I think... Hopefully, the receiverships that are in place, and there are multiple depending on the case and the property, will help to get these properties back up to some kind of basic level of quality, right? After that, it's really going to depend on how the court cases shake out and who ends up owning these properties in the long term.
Well, I've been talking with Chief Counsel of the Cincinnati Law Department's Quality of Life Division, Mark Manning, and WVXU long-form reporter Nick Swartzel. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you again.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, evictions in Hamilton County are on the rise. We'll explore the reasons and discuss the impact on renters and property owners. This is Cincinnati Edition.